London. Michaelmas term lately over, and the Lord Chancellor sitting in Lincoln's Inn Hall. Implacable November weather. As much mud in the streets as if the waters had but newly retired from the face of the earth, and it would not be wonderful to meet a megalosaurus waddling up Holborn Hill. Smoke lowering down from chimney pots, making a soft black drizzle with flakes of soot in it as big as full-grown snowflakes gone into mourning, one might imagine, for the death of the sun. Fog everywhere. Fog up the river among green meadows, fog down the river among the lines of shipping, fog on the Essex marshes, fog on the Kentish heights. And hard by Temple Bar, in Lincoln's Inn Hall, at the very heart of the fog, sits the Lord Chancellor in his High Court of Chancery.
And therefore, my lord,
Mr. Tango,
my lord,
have you nearly concluded your argument?
My lord, no. There are a variety of points. Feel it my duty, submit your lordship.
Then we will proceed with the hearing on Wednesday fortnight. In reference to the young girl...
Begging your lordship's pardon, boy.
In reference to the young girl and boy, wards of the court, now in my private room... I will see them and satisfy myself as to the expediency of making the order for their residing with their cousin. I will resume the matter tomorrow morning when I take my seat.
My lord, please!
Silence!
The despairing voice is hushed and the ruined suitor hustled away, for the Lord Chancellor has vanished and everyone else vanishes too. The empty court is locked up. If all the misery it has caused could only be locked up with it, of the whole burnt away in a great funeral pyre, why, so much the better for other parties than the parties in Jarndyce and Jarndyce.
Bleak House by Charles Dickens. Dramatized in 8 episodes by Betty Davis. With Michael Bryant, Sarah Kestelman, Robert Lang, and Brenda Blessing as Esther Summerson. Part 1. The Wards in Jarndyce.
Miss Ada Clare.
This is Miss Clare, my lord.
Sit down here, Miss Clare.
Thank you, my lord.
And young Mr. Richard Carston?
Yes, my lord.
As your lordship is aware, Mr. John Jarndyce, whom I represent, undertakes to provide a home for these two young people.
Mr. John Jarndyce of Bleak House?
Yes, your lordship.
Bleak House? A dreary name. It is in...
Hertfordshire, my lord.
Mr. Jarndyce is not married?
No, he is not. If I may venture to remind your lordship, Mr. Jarndyce has provided a suitable companion for Miss Clare. This is the young lady, Miss Esther Summerson.
Ah, yes. Good afternoon, Miss Summerson.
Good afternoon, your lordship.
Miss Summerson is not related to any party in the case, I understand.
You know, my lord, Mr. John Jarndyce, however, is Miss Summerson's guardian. If your lordship will allow me...
I see. Miss Clare, do you think you will be happy with this arrangement?
Oh, yes, my lord. I know I shall.
And Mr. Carston?
It seems a very good arrangement to me, my lord, as we are both orphans.
What is the exact relationship between you?
We are cousins, distant cousins. I'm not quite sure of our exact...
No, the exact degree is not important. Had you ever met before?
No, my lord, they met for the first time today. All three are strangers to one another.
I see. Well, that state of affairs will soon be remedied, I trust. Mr. Jarndyce of Bleak House has chosen, so far as I can judge, a very good companion for Miss Clare, and the arrangement altogether seems the best the circumstances admit. I shall make the order.
Well, that's over. Where do we go now, Miss Summerson?
I don't know. We must wait until Mr. Kenge has finished his talk with the Lord Chancellor.
We are left alone like the babes in the wood.
But I see no kind robins coming to cover us with leaves.
Ah, the woods in Jarndyce.
Who's this?
Oh, very happy, I'm sure, to have the honour. It's a good omen for youth and hope and beauty when they find themselves in this place and don't know what's to come of it.
Mad.
Right. Quite mad, young gentleman.
Oh, I didn't...
I was a ward myself once. I wasn't mad at the time. I had youth and hope And I believe you. Beauty. It matters very little now. I have the honor to attend court regularly with my documents. I expect a judgment shortly on the day of judgment. Pray accept my blessing.
We're much obliged to you.
Yes, I imagine so. And here is Mr. Kent. Conversation Kent, they call him, with his documents. How does your honourable worship do?
Quite well, quite well. Now, don't be troublesome, Miss Flight. There's a good soul.
By no means. I shall confer estates on both. That is not being troublesome, I trust. I expect a judgment soon. Accept my blessing.
Who is that old lady?
Miss Flight. She is, what she once was, a party to a suit.
Ah.
She comes here every day and has done so for many years. She is not in full command of all her faculties, poor creature. But she's harmless, I assure you. Now, if you will accompany me back to my office, I will tell you Mr. Jarndyce's plans for you. It is now well advanced towards evening, and the weather is not particularly clement. Mr. Jarndyce considered that as the road to Bleak House would be long, dark, and tedious at such an hour, it would be best to postpone your departure until tomorrow, when he will send a carriage for you. You will all spend tonight at Mrs. Jellyby's.
Who is Mrs. Jellyby, sir?
A lady of remarkable strength of character, who has devoted herself to an extensive variety of public subjects. At present, she is interested in Africa.
Africa?
Yes. She is working on a plan for the happy settlement of our superabundant home population on the banks of the African rivers. Mr. Jarndyce has, I believe, a high opinion of Mrs. Jellyby.
What does Mr. Jellyby do?
Mr. Jellyby? I don't think that I can describe him better than by saying that he is the husband of Mrs. Jellyby. He is, so to speak, merged in the more shining qualities of his wife.
Did you ring, Mr. Kennedy?
Yes, Guppy. Has all the baggage been sent round?
Yes, sir. And a coach is waiting.
Then it only remains for me to express my satisfaction at the successful conclusion of the arrangement made today. Miss Clare, Miss Summerson, Mr. Carstone. Good day to you.
Good day, sir.
Good day. Guppy, see the party safely there.
Sir?
Where are we going, Mr. Guppy?
Thavies Inn.
I don't know where that is. I don't know London.
It's only round a corner. We've just come up Chancery Lane. Now we're cutting along to Holborn. And we'll be there in about 1 minute, near as a toucher. This is about a London particular, isn't it, Miss Summerson?
The fog is very dense, yes.
Not that it affects you, Miss. On the country seems to do you good, judging from your appearance.
Thank you, Mr. Guppy.
That's it there.
What's the matter? What are all those people doing?
No, I'll have a look, Miss. That's it again, are they? Yeah. But it's nothing to worry about. It's one of the young Jellybys been put his head through the area railings.
Oh, the poor child. Let me out.
No, it's not. You be careful now, miss. I mean, young Jellybys are always up to something.
Now, give him another poor bill.
Oh, stop.
I'm sorry, miss. We was only trying to get...
You can't. Not that way. I think it'd be better to push him.
No.
No, not yet. He'll fall on his head in the area. Mr. Carston.
I'll go and catch him. Come on, Guppy.
Careful!
All right, you ready?
Yeah,
here we
are.
Now!
Right!
Got him! Hello! Let it be, you little devil! What you hear me for, Mr. Carstone? Get him quick, before he kills me!
Presents the compliments to Mr. Swallow and begs...
What?
Come along, Caddy. Pay attention.
Yes, Mama.
Them two young ladies, Mrs. Jellyby.
Ah, I'm very gratified to have the pleasure of receiving you. Which is Miss Clare?
I am Ada Clare. This is Miss Esther Summerson.
And where's the young gentleman?
He's carrying Master Peepy upstairs.
Oh, he's dropped him!
I'm sure it was that naughty Peepy's fault.
Hadn't we better...
No. Priscilla will see to it. I'm very glad to meet you. I have a great respect for Mr. Jarndyce. You'll find me, my dears, very busy, but that you'll excuse.
Of course.
I'm always very busy. The African project employs my whole time. I'm happy to say it's advancing. By this time next year, we hope to have 150 to 200 families cultivating coffee and educating the natives of Borrioboola-Gar on the banks of the Niger.
How gratifying.
It is indeed gratifying. Miss Summerson, I wonder that you have never turned your thoughts to Africa.
Me? But I thought the climate...
The finest climate in the world, with precaution. You may go into Holborn without precaution and be run over. You may go into Holborn with precaution and never be run over. Just so with Africa.
No doubt.
Will you forgive me while I finish the letter I was dictating? My eldest daughter, Caroline. My amanuensis.
Good evening, Miss Jellyby.
Good evening.
Where did we get to, Caddy?
Presents her compliments to Mr. Swallow and begs.
And begs to inform him in reference to his letter of inquiry on the African project. No, Peepee, not on any account. I am busy. Go away. His letter of inquiry on the African project.
These are your rooms. There's a second bedroom through that door. Would you like some hot water?
If it isn't too much trouble.
It's no trouble. The question is there any? The boiler's out of order and I don't know where the kettle's gone. I'll go and look. Dinner's at 7 o'clock. At least that's when it's supposed to be.
Shall we draw the curtain?
Oh, dear.
What is it?
It seems to be fastened up with a fork.
What a very strange household this is.
I'm afraid those poor children are very neglected. Do you think Mrs. Jellyby would mind if I gave little Peepy a wash?
I don't think she'd even notice. She can't see anything nearer than Africa.
Miss Clare, may I ask you a question?
My name is Ada, and I shall call you Esther. And you may ask me 1,000 questions.
What is your cousin Jarndyce like? Would you mind describing him to me?
But have you not met him?
Never. All our communication has been by letter.
My own case exactly.
Oh. And Mr. Carston?
Oh, I think that Richard met him once, 5 years ago, when he was at school. He said he was a bluff, rosy fellow. When did he become your guardian?
6 years ago, when my godmother died. Before that, I lived with her.
And after she died, where did you live then?
I was sent away to an establishment for young ladies. First, I was a pupil there, then I taught. I wrote to my guardian, but I never saw him. And often, it was Mr. Kench who replied.
I remember that my mother told me that our cousin John was very kind, but that was long ago. My mother died when I was young.
Can you remember her?
A little. I remember that she was very pretty.
Like you.
Thank you. Can you remember your mother? Esther?
No. Only my godmother. I don't think that Miss Jellyby can have found that kettle.
No. Washing in cold water. Oh, dear. I hope Bleak House is more comfortable than this.
Only my godmother.
Your mother, Esther, is your disgrace, and you were hers. The time will come when you will understand this, as only a woman can.
It was my 9th birthday. I remember it so clearly, and my godmother's handsome face darkening as she looked at me. I had often thought that if she smiled, she would have been beautiful. But she never smiled.
Submission, self-denial, diligent work are the preparations for a life begun with such a shadow upon it. You are different from other children, Esther. You are set apart.
I went to my room and crept to bed. I laid my doll's cheek against mine, wet with tears, and holding that solitary friend to me, cried myself to sleep. Young as I was, I knew already that I had brought no joy at any time to anyone's heart. From that day on, I resolved that when I grew up, I would try to be industrious, contented, and kind. Then, perhaps, someday, someone would love me.
Oh,
do be careful. The carpet is so torn.
And there aren't any stair rods.
Is that poor Peepee again?
That's more than one child. How many little Jellybys are there, I wonder?
I've seen 6.
3 of them came upstairs. They were looking in through the crack in the bedroom door. So Esther brought them in and told them the story of Little Red Riding Hood. They seemed very surprised.
All of them appear to be in tatters, and they're remarkably grubby. It seems that washing is not encouraged in this establishment. I had to wash my hands in a pie dish.
Did you have any hot water?
Yes, after a great deal of to-do.
Oh, then Miss Jellyby found the kettle.
No, I did. It was on my dressing table.
Oh, those very bad children. Priscilla needs to be firmer with them, I fear. Dinner, I trust, will be ready in 10 minutes.
Mrs. Jellyby was a little optimistic. It was 7:30 before dinner was served. It was held up because the potatoes had been mislaid, but eventually Priscilla found the dish in the coal scuttle. After dinner, Mrs. Jellyby returned to her correspondence and pronounced some beautiful sentiments about, I think, the brotherhood of humanity. Mr. Jellyby sat in a corner with his head against the wall. He seemed in low spirits. It was nearly midnight before we found an opportunity of going to our rooms.
Yes? I came up to say good night.
Oh, come in. Don't wake Miss Clare, her door's open.
Thank you. I wish Africa were dead.
What?
I do. It's a beast.
Miss Jellyby.
Well, it is. Miss Clare sound asleep. She looks so peaceful. She's very pretty, isn't she?
Yes, she's beautiful.
An orphan, ain't she?
Yes.
But I expect she knows a quantity. She can dance and play music and sing, can't she? She can talk French and do geography and globes and needlework and everything.
I expect she can.
I can't. I can't do anything except write. I'm always writing for Ma. It's disgraceful. You know it is. The whole house is disgraceful. The children are disgraceful. I'm disgraceful. Pa's miserable and no wonder. Priscilla drinks. Didn't you smell that dinner? It was as bad as a public house.
But I didn't know.
Yes, you did. You know you did.
I didn't, because she never came near me. But I don't doubt what you tell me. I'm sorry to hear it.
You needn't make a virtue of that.
No, that would be very foolish.
I'm sorry. I'm sorry to have spoken to you so. I like you. I like you so much. Oh, I wish I were dead. I wish we were all dead.
Miss Jellyby. Miss Jellyby.
What?
Where?
It's morning.
Yes, it's morning.
Oh, have I slept here all night?
Yes, you cried yourself to sleep.
I remember you were very kind to me. But did you sleep in that chair? Why didn't you go to bed?
I was afraid I'd wake you if I moved.
Think a lot about other people, don't you? I wish I did. The fog's clearing.
Perhaps the sun will come out.
Are you tired, Miss Summerson? Would you like to go to bed now and sleep properly?
No, I'm not at all tired.
Because Ma won't be down for ever so long, and then it's a chance of breakfast ready for another hour. Pa never has a regular breakfast. Priscilla leaves him out the loaf and some milk, but sometimes the cat drinks it. Would you like to go for a walk?
I should like that very much. We'll tell Miss Clare and Mr. Carston.
Where would you like to go?
Anywhere.
Anywhere's nowhere.
Well, let's go somewhere, at any rate.
You needn't laugh at me.
Are you running a race? We can't keep up with you.
I'm sorry.
We're never to get out of Chancery. We're back where we were yesterday. Oh, by the great seal, here's that old lady again.
Good morning, Jarndyce. Very happy, I'm sure.
Who's this?
A suitor, my child. At your service.
Have I the honour of addressing another of the youthful parties in Jarndyce?
No, Miss Flight. Miss Jellyby isn't connected with the suit.
Then she will still grow old. But not so old. This is the garden of Lincoln's Inn. Pray, come and see my lodging. It's quite close by. Youth and hope and beauty are very seldom there.
Do you think we should?
We'd better. We don't want to give offence to the poor creature. Thank you, Miss Flight. We will follow you.
Come. It will only take a moment.
She spoke the truth. She lived so close by that before we had time to reconsider, she stopped most unexpectedly in a narrow back street immediately outside the wall of Lincoln's Inn, just by a shop on which was written Crook, Rag and Bottle Warehouse. In all parts of the window were quantities of dirty bottles, blacking bottles, medicine bottles, ginger beer bottles, wine bottles and ink bottles. There were a great many ink bottles. Inside there were heaps of old crackled parchment scrolls and discoloured law papers. In the corner were a pile of bones, picked very clean, and an old man in a hairy cap, carrying a lantern.
Hi. Have you anything to sell?
No. Miss Flight was kind enough to offer to show us where she lived.
My landlord, Crook. He's called the Lord Chancellor among the neighbours, and his shop is called the Court of Chancery. He is a very eccentric person.
It's true enough what she says. Oh, there's lovely hair. I've got such and such a lady's hair, but none so beautiful as this.
It
feels so fine.
That will do, my friend. You can admire as the rest of us do, from a distance.
But I feel proud that Mr. Crook admires it so much.
Yes, what colour, what texture. Beautiful. Why do you think they call me the Lord Chancellor?
I've no idea.
Because I've so many things here all wasting away, so the neighbours think, but they know nothing. And I've a liking for must and rust and cobwebs, and I can't bear to part with anything I once lay hold of. So the neighbours think. That's the way I got the ill name of Chancery. Ah, Lady Jane. Show them how you scratch. Here's some rags for you. Tear, my lady, tear. She'd do as much for anyone I was to sit her on to.
That will do, Crook. You mean well, but are tiresome. My friends are pressed for time, and I have that to spare myself, having to attend court very soon. My young friends are the wards in Jarndyce.
Jarndyce?
Jarndyce and Jarndyce. The great suit.
Think of it. Your name, sir, would be?
Richard Carston.
Carston, yes. There was the name of Barbary and the name of Clare, and the name of Dedlock, too, I think.
Wait. You know as much about it as the real Lord Chancellor.
Oh, Old Tom Jarndyce was often in here when the case was on. He used to talk to the shopkeepers and tell them to keep out of Chancery. He said it was being ground to death in a slow mill, being roasted at a slow fire, going mad by grains. He was near to making away with himself. Just where that young lady's standing now. He came in at that door on the day he did it and sat himself on a bench. He was depressed. I hadn't a mind to leave him alone. I persuaded him to go to the tavern over the way, t'other side of Chancery Lane. I saw him settled in an armchair there. But I'd hardly got back here when I heard a shot go echoing and rattling right through the inn. We all ran out into the road. And everyone cried at once, Tom Jarndyce! Terrible. Yeah.
Come. Time is pressing. I would be obliged if you would let me have your lantern, Crook.
Take it then.
Thank you. Follow me. He is a little... you know. Yes. A little... My room is at the top of the house. No, not that door. One flight higher.
Who lives there?
A law writer. He calls himself Nemo. The children in the lane say he sold himself to the devil. But I'm sure I don't know what he's done with the money.
Is he the only other lodger?
Yes. Shh. He will hear us. My apartment. Come. Extremely honoured, I'm sure, by this visit from the wards in Jarndyce. I've been here many years. I pass my days in court, my evenings and my nights here. I find the nights long. For I sleep but little, and think much. I'm sorry I cannot offer chocolate.
Oh, please, we do not want refreshments.
I expect a judgment shortly. Then I shall place my establishment on a superior footing. At present, I sometimes find it difficult to keep up a genteel appearance. I have felt the cold here. I have felt something sharper than cold. But I have companions. See?
Why, how pretty.
Songbirds. I began to keep the little creatures with the intention of restoring them to liberty when my judgment should be given. They die in prison. Their lives are so short in comparison with Chancery proceedings. I cannot allow them to sing much. For I find that my mind is confused by the idea that they are singing while I
am following the arguments in court. And my mind needs to be very clear, you know.
Of course.
Another time, I'll tell you their names. But today, a day of such good omen, they shall sing in honor of youth and beauty and hope. We'll let in the full light. I cannot open the window. Crook's cat is greedy for their lives. She crouches on the parapet outside. She's sly and full of malice. I believe sometimes that she is no cat, but the wolf which is so difficult to keep from the door. Half past nine. Where are my documents? I must go to court. You will forgive me.
Of course. We must go too. Thank you, Miss Blythe.
Here is your lantern, Crooker. Take it. I must go to court. Today may be the day of judgment.
Goodbye.
Goodbye, Mr. Crook.
Goodbye to you. Beautiful hair. Hi! Wait a minute!
I beg your pardon?
Wait a minute, miss.
Miss Summerson, are you coming? I'll follow you. What is it?
Can you read that on the wall?
Yes, of course. It's very plain.
What is it?
The letter J. A capital J.
What's that?
A. R-N-D-Y-C-E.
What does that spell?
Jarndyce.
You see, I have a turn for copying from memory, though I can't read or write. No. Don't go yet. What's this?
B. L. E. A. K. H. O. Bleak House. You've written Bleak House.
Have I now? So I have. Bleak House. Jarndyce of Bleak House.
Miss Summerson, I hope you're not selling your hair. Three sacks are quite enough for Mr. Crook.
I lost no time in bidding Mr. Crook good morning. He looked so disagreeable, and his cat looked so wickedly at me, as if I were a blood relation of the birds upstairs. After breakfast, the carriage came, and we rolled away from Thavies Inn, away from London, onto a real country road with windmills, rickyards, trees, fields and hedgerows. At last we were on our way to Mr. Jarndyce of Bleak House.
Good afternoon, my dears.
Mr. Jarndyce?
Yes, and you are?
Ada Clare.
Ada, my love. Esther, my dear. You must be Esther.
Yes.
Welcome to Bleak House. Rick, I'm heartily glad to see you.
Sir.
Come and sit by the fire.
You're very kind, sir. Thank you.
How did you like the ride?
Very much. The countryside was so beautiful.
And how did you like Mrs. Jellyby? Esther, aren't you going to answer me?
She works very hard for Africa.
Oh, nobly. But is that all?
We rather thought that perhaps she was a little unmindful of her house.
Flawed. Go on, my dear. I need to know what you really thought. Perhaps I sent you there on purpose.
The little Jellybys, forgive me, sir, are in the devil of a state.
Yes, well, she means well. The wind's in the east, I'm afraid.
It was in the north when we came down.
Oh, my dear Rick, I'll take my oath it's in the east or going to be. I'm always uncomfortable when the wind's in the east.
Rheumatism, sir?
I dare say. Those little Jellybys, I had my doubts about them. Oh, Lord, yes. Couldn't you... If it had rained sugar plums or anything of that sort...
It did better than that, Cousin John.
Cousin John? I like that. How did it do better than that?
It rained Esther.
What did Esther do?
Why, she was their friend, directly. She nursed them, washed them, and put them to sleep. She told them stories, and she softened poor Caroline, the eldest one, and was so thoughtful for me. Cousin John, thank you for the companion you've given me.
Where did you say the wind was, Rick?
In the north, as we came down.
You're right, my boy, quite right. There's no east in it. Come now, come and see your home.
Beautiful.
It isn't bleak at all. It's so warm, so pretty.
Oh, I'm glad you like it. It makes no pretensions, but it's a comfortable little place, I hope. And will be more so with such bright young people in it. You've barely half an hour before dinner. There's no one here but the finest company on earth, a child.
More children, Esther.
I don't mean literally a child. He's, at least as old as I am. But in simplicity and freshness and a fine, guileless ineptitude for worldly affairs, he's a perfect child.
He must be very interesting.
Oh, yes. Yes, he is. He's a musician and he's an artist. An amateur, it's true. But he might have been a professional. Oh, he's a man of rare attainments. He's been unfortunate in his pursuits. But he's still a child.
Has he any children of his own?
Half a dozen. Nearer a dozen. But he's never looked after them. How could he? He's a child himself.
So, have the children looked after themselves, then?
Why, you know they say the children of the very poor aren't brought up, they're dragged up. Well, Harold Skimpole's children have tumbled up, somehow or other. Oh, dear me. Oh, dear. The wind's in the east again, I fear.
I covered nothing, Mr. Carskin. My possession is nothing to me.
But
now, here is my friend Jarndyce's excellent house.
Oh,
now, when I'm here, I have sufficient possession of it. And I have neither trouble, cost, nor responsibility. My steward's name is Jarndyce, and he can't cheat me. Oh, it is only you, the generous creatures, whom I envy. I envy you your power of doing what you do. It's what I should revel in myself. But I don't, however, feel any vulgar gratitude.
Oh, no.
No, I feel you should be grateful to me for giving you the opportunity of enjoying the luxury of generosity.
Oh.
I mean, why should I regret my incapacity for worldly affairs when it leads to such pleasant consequences?
After dinner, Ada sat at the piano and played to us. She sang as sweetly as she looked, and Mr. Skimpole said she was like a summer morning. I quite warmed to him. But after a little while, I missed first Mr. Skimpole and then Richard. I wondered how they could bring themselves to stay away.
Excuse me, miss. Yes. Could you spare a minute?
Of course. What is it?
If you please, miss. Mr. Carston says, could you come upstairs to Mr. Skimpole's room? He's been took, miss.
Took,
miss. Sudden.
Well, I'll go up at once. Don't disturb anyone else.
No, miss.
Miss Summerson, I'm so glad you've come. You can advise us. I'm afraid our friend Mr. Skimpole has been arrested for debt.
And really, my dear Miss Summerson, I was never in a situation in which you're... quiet good sense was more needed.
Are you arrested for very much, sir?
Oh, my dear lady, I don't know. Some pounds, odd shillings and half pence, I think.
It's £24.16.08. That's what it is.
Listen, it sounds... somehow it sounds a small sum.
Mr. Skimpole has some delicacy about applying to my cousin John Jarndyce because he's lately...
Yes, I forget how much it was. Jarndyce would readily do it again, but I have the epicure-like feeling that I'd prefer to develop a generosity in a new soil.
What do you think would be best, Miss Summerson?
What would happen if the money wasn't paid?
Jail. Or Colvin's.
May I ask what is...
Colvin's? A house.
You see, I thought that being parties in a chancery suit concerning a large amount of money
Mr. Richard or his beautiful cousin, Miss Clare, could give me some sort of undertaking or pledge. I mean, would that settle this affair?
Not a bit on it.
Really? How odd.
Odd or even, I tell you, not a bit on it.
Miss Summerson, I have £10 Mr. Kenge gave me. I must try what that will do.
I have £15 and more. I saved it from my quarterly allowance. Perhaps between us.
Yes, yes. Mr. Skimpole.
Yes?
We think we can assist you.
Oh, my young friends, I'm touched. I'm delighted to have provided the occasion for the exercise of such noble generosity. my friend.
You mean me?
Oh, yes, indeed, I do. Now that this little problem is to be settled, may I ask if you knew this morning that you were coming down here on this errand?
Knowed it yesterday afternoon, at tea time.
But did it make you at all uneasy?
Not a bit of it.
But when you came down here, the sun was shining. The birds were singing. Did you not think Harold Skimpole loves to see the sunshine and to hear the birds sing? I'm about to deprive him of his share in such things, his birthright. Did you not think that?
I certainly did not.
How very odd.
Come in.
If you please, miss, these are for you.
For me? What are they?
For the housekeeper's keys. The large bunch is the housekeeping, and the little bunch is the cellars. I'm to show you everything tomorrow, as soon as you wish.
Thank you. I shall be up at 6:30.
Yes, miss.
I sat before my dressing table in my pretty, comfortable little room, quite lost in the magnitude of my trust. And then my fancy wandered back to my godmother's house and reawakened shadowy speculations as to what knowledge Mr. Jarndyce had of my earliest history, even as to the possibility of his being my father, though that idle dream was quite gone now, buried as deep as my dear old doll. On the day I left my godmother's house, I had wrapped her in her shawl and laid her in the garden earth under the tree that shaded my old window. It was all gone now, I remembered, and said to myself, "Esther, duty, my dear," and gave my little basket of housekeeping keys such a shake that they sounded like little bells and rang me hopefully to bed. Next morning, after breakfast, where Mr. Skimpole had discoursed upon the superiority of drones to worker bees and eaten all the honey, Mr. Jarndyce called me into a small room which was in part a little library of books and papers, in part a little museum of boots and shoes and hat boxes.
Sit down, my dear. This, you must know, is my growlery. When I am out of temper, I come and growl here.
Then you must be here very seldom.
Oh, you don't know me. When the wind's in the east, I take refuge here. It's the best used room in the house.
My dear, what is it? What's the matter?
I'm so happy, sir. My heart is so full.
Oh, there, there. Don't be foolish. I hear of a good little orphan girl without a protector, and take it into my head to be that protector. She grows up, and I hear from everyone that she has more than justified my good opinion, and I remain her guardian and her friend. Mm-hmm. So, that's over, isn't it? Hmm?
Yes, sir.
Good, good. Well, now, you don't understand this chancery business, do you, Esther?
No, sir.
I think you'd better call me guardian, my dear. Hmm? No, I didn't think you'd understand it. I don't know who does. The lawyers have twisted it into such a state of bedevilment.
It was about a will, wasn't it?
It was about a will when it was about anything. A certain Jarndyce, in an evil hour, made a great fortune and made a great will. In the question of how the trusts under the will are to be administered, the fortune is being squandered away. No, but it won't do to think of it. When my great-uncle, poor Tom Jarndyce, began to think of it, it was the beginning of the end. I was his heir, and this was his house. He lived here, shut up, night and day, poring over the wicked heaps of papers in the suit. Although Bleak House was not in Chancery, its master was. And thus, through years and years and lives, everything goes on constantly, beginning over and over again, and nothing ever ends. And we can't get out of the suit on any terms, for we are made parties to it and must be parties to it, whether we like it or not. Oh, it doesn't do to think of it, my dear.
I don't think of it, sir.
Well, you're not caught up in its web, Esther. You may be thankful for that, at least. Ah, I see you have your housekeeping keys. Did you find everything you wanted?
Yes, guardian. Ah. Everything was in perfect order. I hope I won't disappoint you.
Disappoint me?
You must not mistake me. I'm afraid I'm not clever.
Oh, you're quite clever enough for me.
I hope I may turn out to be so, but...
You're clever enough to be the good little woman of our lives. The little old woman of the rhyme. Yeah? Little old woman and wither so high to sweep the cobwebs out of the sky. You'll sweep the cobwebs out of our skies, my dear. And I shall call you Dame Durden after the old song. Hmm? Just one word more.
Yes, guardian?
Esther, my dear, do you wish to ask me anything?
About myself, sir?
Yes, about yourself.
If there were anything I ought to know, I should not have to ask you to tell it to me.
Ah.
I have nothing to ask you. Nothing in the world.
While the sun shines on Esther in Hertfordshire, the fog is gathering again in the heart of London. It has the presumption to lie dank and heavy upon the town house of Sir Leicester and Lady Dedlock, newly arrived from their place in Lincolnshire, where her ladyship has been excessively bored. Here, on this muddy, murky day, Mr. Tulkinghorn, an old-fashioned old gentleman who has the honour to be Sir Leicester's legal adviser, presents himself to acquaint Lady Dedlock with the progress that has, or has not, been made in the case of Jarndyce and Jarndyce. For Lady Dedlock, the beautiful Lady Dedlock, leader of the fashionable world, is yet another party to the case who cannot get out of it whether she likes it or not. She sits by the fire, watching Mr. Tulkinghorn as he glances through his papers, looking bored to distraction. Sir Leicester watches too. He is nearly 70, 20 years and more older than his lady, whom he married, they say, for love alone. He is an honourable, obstinate, truthful, prejudiced, perfectly unreasonable man.
Sure, Mr. Tulkinghorn, her ladyship's cause has been before the Chancellor again, has it?
Yes. It has been on again yesterday.
It would be useless to ask if anything has been done.
Nothing that you would call anything has been done, my lady.
Nor ever will be.
However, as a few fresh affidavits have been put on the file, and as I proceed on the troublesome principle of passing on to my clients any new proceedings at once, and further, as I believe you are going to Paris...
We are going to Paris tomorrow.
As you are going to Paris... I have brought the papers with me. In Chancery, between John Jarndyce...
Oh, Mr. Tulkinghorn, spare us those formal horrors, if you please. It is enough to acquaint us with the essential facts.
Very well, my lady. I will begin again. Further on. I beg your pardon, my lady. Allow me, please. I'll pick it up.
No matter, I have it here. Whose writing is that?
I beg your pardon.
That paper. Is that what you people call law hand?
Not quite. Probably the legal character which it has was acquired after the original hand was formed. Why do you ask?
Anything to vary this detestable monotony. Go on, please.
Where was I? On this 16th day of November...
Oh.
Sir Leicester.
Yeah? Yeah. What is it?
I'm afraid that Lady Dedlock is not well.
Faint. Only that. Ring for the maid.
My dear.
Don't speak to me. Have them take me to my room.
Of course, my dear.
A faint, that is all. But it is like the faintness of death.
Lady Dedlock is unwell. Would you assist her to her room?
Yes, Sir Leicester. Your ladyship, permit me. Please.
Thank you. A moment's faintness. That is all.
Mm. Oh, I'm sorry, Mr. Tulkinghorn. I've never known her ladyship to swoon before. But the weather is extremely trying. And she really has been bored to death down at our place in Lincolnshire.
The waters are out in Lincolnshire, and Chesney Wold, the Dedlock place, lies cold and empty beneath a leaden sky. An arch of the bridge in the park has been sapped away, and the adjacent ground is a stagnant river with melancholy trees for islands in it. The view from my Lady Dedlock's room is alternately a lead-coloured view and a view in Indian ink. One room is inhabited, the housekeeper's room, where old Mrs. Rouncewell sits smiling at a welcome visitor, her grandson.
I'm glad to see you, Watt. Why, you've grown into a fine young fellow. You're like your poor Uncle George.
They say I'm like my father, Grandmother.
Like him too, of course. Is he well?
Thriving in every way.
Good, good. An ironmaster. There were not such things when I was a girl. But he's done well, very well.
Grandmother?
Yes?
Who was that very pretty girl you were with just now when I arrived?
You mean Rosa, child. She's the daughter of a widow in the village. Maids are hard to teach nowadays, and she's an apt scholar and will do well. She lives here, and she shows house to visitors already. Yes, she's very pretty.
I hope I haven't driven her away.
I suppose she thought we had family affairs to speak of. She's very modest. It's a fine quality in a young woman, and scarcer than it used to be.
If you please, ma'am, there's two young men in a gig come who want to see the house. Well, I told them it was the wrong day, but the young man who was driving asked me to bring you his card.
Mr. Guppy? Mr. Guppy? I've never heard of him.
If you please, he told me so. But he said that he and the other young gentleman, oh, Mr. Jobling, his name is, came from London on business at the magistrates' meeting this morning. They're lawyers. Oh, he says he isn't in Mr. Tulkinghorn's office, but he's sure he can make use of Mr. Tulkinghorn's name.
Mr. Tulkinghorn? Oh, well, that makes a difference. You may admit them, Roseanne. You may show them round.
If you please, Grandmother.
Yes, my boy.
Perhaps Rosa would not mind showing me round, too.
Much obliged, you may.
Yes. Us London lawyers, we don't often get out, and when we do, we like to make the most of it, you know.
A fine old place, ain't it?
Chesney Wold goes back a very long way. It's always been in the possession of the Dedlock family. The present baronet, Sir Leicester Dedlock, is in town at the moment.
Ah, oh,
this way, sir, if you please.
Oh.
This is the drawing room.
Well, there's plenty of room, eh?
Bless my soul.
Who's that?
I'm sorry, sir.
The picture over the fireplace, who is it?
Oh, it is a portrait of the present Lady Dedlock. It is considered a perfect likeness.
Well, blessed if I've ever seen her, yet I know her. Has the picture been engraved, miss?
Oh, no. Sir Leicester's always refused permission.
Well, I'll be shot if it ain't curious how well I know that picture. So that's Lady Dedlock.
The picture on the right is the present Sir Leicester Dedlock. The picture on the left is his father, the late Sir Leicester.
I can't understand it. I'm dashed if I don't think I must have had a dream with that picture.
What's through there, miss?
Oh, it admits the picture gallery, where there are many fine portraits of Sir Leicester's ancestors.
Oh.
Follow me, please. Mm.
Well, thank you, miss, and thank you very much, ma'am. It's passed the afternoon nicely.
Oh, yes.
And we'll be on our way.
Oh, you will have noticed the terrace below the house, sir.
Well, no. Can't say we did.
Well, perhaps you would like to look at it as you leave. It is much admired. It is called, from an old story in the family, The Ghost's Walk.
What's the story?
I don't know it, sir.
But anything to do with a picture? You'll excuse my asking, but the more I think of that picture, the better I know it.
The story has nothing to do with the picture, sir. It's not related to visitors. Indeed, it is almost forgotten.
Oh. Well, thank you again. Much obliged, I'm sure. And good day to you.
Good day.
Almost forgotten, Grandmother. Is that true?
No. But it's not the concern of that young man.
Tell us about it, please.
Well, it seems that in the days of the blessed martyr, King Charles I, Sir Morbury Dedlock had wedded a wife who secretly supported the king's enemies. When her brother was killed in the war, she grew to hate her husband and his family. Sir Morbury found her one day in the stables, attempting to lame his favourite horse so that he could not ride out in the king's cause. They struggled. The horse lashed out, and the lady herself was lamed in the hip, and from that time she began to pine away. Do you hear a sound like a footstep on the terrace?
I hear the rain drip.
Sir Morbury's lady walked on the terrace every day, up and down, with the help of the stone balustrade. At last one afternoon her husband saw her fall. He ran to her, but she turned from him and said, I will die here where I have walked, and I will walk here, though I am in my grave, until the pride of the house is humbled. And when calamity or disgrace is coming to it, let the Dedlocks listen for my step.
And so she died?
Yes, she died there where she'd walked. From that day, the terrace was known as the Ghost's Walk. The step is only heard after dark. It's often unheard for a long time. But it comes back, and as sure as there is sickness or death in the family, it will be heard.
And disgrace, Grandmother?
Disgrace? Disgrace never comes to Chesney Wold.
In part one of Charles Dickens's Bleak House, dramatized in 8 episodes by Betty Davis, the part of Esther Summerson was played by Brenda Blethyn and Mr. Jarndyce by Michael Bryant. With Harston, Andrew Sear, Ada, Maggie Wilkinson, Lady Dedlock, Sarah Kestelman, Sir Leicester Dedlock, Jack May, Mr. Tulkinghorn, Robert Lang, Miss Flight, Sylvia Coleridge, Crook, John Hollis, Mr. Guppy, William Nye, Mr. Kenge, Philip Boss, Harold Skimpole, David Collings, Caddy Jellyby, Suzanne Burden, Mrs. Jellyby, Anne Carroll, Mrs. Rouncewell, Margot Boyd, Watt, Andrew Seacombe, Rosa, Nika Burns. With Lockwood West, Michael Tudor Barnes, Steve Hodson, John Livesey, Alan Dudley, Stephen Thorne, Stella Forge, Teresa Stratfield, and Jill Lidston. And Simon Cadell as Charles Dickens. The pianist was Mary Nash. The director was Jane Morgan.